ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The Biden administration is considering executive action to toughen asylum restrictions. An official says the president is still hoping Congress will pass a border security deal. More than 150,000 Americans will get emails from President Biden telling them their student loan debt has been forgiven.
Starting today, we're canceling student debt for borrowers who are enrolled in the SAFE plan and have been paying student loans for as little as 10 years.
To qualify, you must also have a balance of no more than $12,000. The FBI is offering an up to $15,000 reward for information which leads to the whereabouts of 12-year-old Lori Page. The Tallahassee, Florida girl has been missing since last June. A high school in Jackson, Mississippi was on lockdown while police searched for three armed suspects who were accused of stealing vehicles and firearms. The suspects fled into a wooded area. This is ABC News. An American soldier that was stationed in Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas, has been extradited to Mexico to face charges.
Far from fighting his extradition, Army Specialist Saul Luna Villa signed documents asking a U.S. federal court to expedite his return to Mexico, where he's accused of stabbing Aylin Valenzuela and shooting her in the head and chest last April. Valenzuela's mother said her daughter had been seeing the 23-year-old Villa for several years. On an international bridge in El Paso Tuesday, Villa was handed over to Mexican authorities to be formally charged. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
The Internal Revenue Service is opening dozens of audits on the private jets, businesses, and how they're used by executives who claim tax deductions. The agency says it's part of a mission to go after cheats who might be trying to game the system. An unusual mission for the Coast Guard. It's launched a program in Washington State's Puget Sound to alert vessels when there are whale sightings. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Jim from Racine, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Jim.
I voted for Reagan back in the day. I guess I've been supporting more of the Democratic Party for the last 40 years or so, but people don't say, oh, man, she's a Republican. She's a Democrat. She's a whatever. I'm a human being. All these other things aren't important. We need to unite against a bigger threat. I think the threat is us becoming a dictatorship. They want us to fail.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Todd Allbutt Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Republican prosecutor is asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to rule on the state's abortion law. Sheboygan County District Attorney Joel Ermansky is appealing a Madison judge's ruling that Wisconsin's law bans feticide but not elective abortion. Ermansky says he wants the high court to take the case directly. After months of speculation, Republican Eric Hovde is officially in the race for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. He made his campaign announcement yesterday on social media.
Everything is going in the wrong direction. All Washington does is divide us and talk about who's to blame. And nothing gets done. That's not the country I know and love.
Wisconsin is a key swing state, and the winner here could decide the balance of power in the Senate. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
Woody is back in the clubhouse. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers making it official today. Pitcher Brandon Woodruff signs a two-year deal with a third-year option to return to the crew. He had surgery on his shoulder last October and was asked, how's he doing so far?
I'm just a little bit over 4 months in. I started a throwing program last week, and that's been going good. It's a slow and steady progression, but as of right now, I feel good. I feel completely normal. Now it's just all about getting my shoulder back used to, you know, the stresses that we do day in and day out. But as of right now, I'm doing great, just following protocol, and, you know, look forward to getting out to Maryvale and getting with the staff and continuing that buildup. So, but as far as 4 months in, man, I'm doing good.
No timetable yet if he could return this year. The Brewers also officially signing catcher Gary Sanchez to a one-year contract. College basketball, Marquette at home tonight. They take on the DePaul Blue Demons. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Sunshine again for tomorrow, a high in the low 50s. Cooler on Friday, mostly sunny in mid-30s. The weekend will remain dry with lots of sunshine, breezy Saturday, low 40s, near 50 Sunday. It's 42 right now.
Hey everybody, it's Todd Alba. On Thursday, we continue to be live from Hayward, Wisconsin for the American Birkin Biter. Join us, noon to 3.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wears a bathing suit in the shower, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Nightlight. I am Pete Schwabba. Happy to be your host for this evening's show, as I am most nights, all nights so far. Great to have you with me on a Wednesday night. Beautiful day. Did I just go through puberty there? Did my voice kind of crazy inflection? Beautiful day. Are you wearing shorts, Conrad?
I am wearing shorts.
Okay, I thought so. You were wearing shorts the other day. It was not that nice.
It was when I got into the studio at 3. And then, you know, I just suffer a little bit when I drive home, but it's only 13 minutes, so.
Yeah, and you got heat in your car, right?
I honestly had the windows open, so.
Why would you have the windows open when it's that cold?
I'm just trying to bring into a brighter spirit.
Wow, what is going
mind
on
over
there?
Matter.
What is going on the other side of the glass over there tonight?
Mind over matter.
All
okay,
spiritual.
Pete.
I like it. All right. Well, very cool. Well, today you could have worn shorts all day. I mean, let's be honest, here in Wisconsin, people wear shorts when it's 10 degrees out, but today was gorgeous and especially warm, I think, down in Madison. And yeah, just a beautiful day. It's supposed to be even nicer tomorrow. The world is ending soon thanks to global warming, but let's enjoy the ride.
Next Tuesday, it's supposed to be 65 degrees.
In Green Bay?
Yeah.
So you know what that means. In Milwaukee, it'll probably be 67. Or 66.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at Milwaukee. Oh. So 65 in Milwaukee, 60 in Green Bay.
Okay. I can live with that.
Yeah.
In February? You kidding me? Get out of town. That's great.
I'm going to wear a t-shirt and shorts that day.
Oh, that's craziness. Drive with the windows closed and the heat on full blast.
I don't know about that one.
Just to keep things interesting. We have a great show for you guys tonight. Some fun guests. Great question. There's a lot going on in the world of show business that we should get to. A lot of fun happenings and anniversaries, birthdays. Tonight on the show, comedian and Emmy Award-winning writer Jeff Cesario. He is a native Wisconsinite, born and raised in Kenosha. Jeff will be here at the bottom of the hour. He's had just a really phenomenal career. He's worked with some of the great. He was on Johnny Carson when the Tonight Show was still hosted by Johnny. David Letterman, he wrote on the Larry Sanders Show for Dennis Miller Live. Jeff is just a really funny guy, a great writer, and a really good human being. He's here at 7:35 tonight. And then last week, we had one of Civic Media's own on, who I always like talking to, Anya Esther. She is the producer of The Maggie Dawn Show, which will begin its new incarnation here. I want to say next week, Conrad, the Maggie Dawn Show from 2 to 4.
I believe it is next week.
I think that's right, yeah. Anya's great. She's also an aspiring filmmaker and a writer, and she found these movie trailers we're going to discuss. They're very funny. And then later in the program, Jorge Reyna, the host of Mad Unity, will join us to talk about what he has coming up later on Mad Unity, if for those of you in the Madison area. So a really packed show. That'll be fun. And Jeff is just a really interesting guy to talk to. If you're interested at all in the process of writing or what it's like being part of a show and a hit show for that matter, you won't want to miss that interview because Jeff is, he's always got lots to say, very insightful, and that will be fun. Today we got some good some heavy hitters, some A-lister birthdays in show business. Jordan Peele turns 44. Kelsey Grammer turns 68. Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones turns 27. And Jennifer Love Hewitt turns 44. Those are all great, all very talented people. More importantly, today is the day that Old School hit theaters in 2003. 21 years ago, Old School was unleashed upon the American people by Todd Phillips, the writer-director. Vince Vaughn, Luke Wilson, Will Ferrell, great cast, very funny, classic comedy. One of those comedies that I know within the first 2 minutes that I'm going to like it. Whether it's a line, a look, you just, at some point, sometimes when you're watching something new, you see, you have, there's a moment where you go, I totally trust this writer or this director, or in this case, the writer-director. An Old School for me, I can't repeat the line, but it was when Luke Wilson got into the cab and the cab driver turns and calls him a name for being kind of a wuss for not being able to figure out the seatbelt. And I went with like 8 friends of mine, all fellow comics, at some huge movie theater in Los Angeles. We just could not stop laughing from beginning to end. Great, great film. And also, in 1996, the movie Bottle Rocket came out. Now, for those of you who are Wes Anderson fans, that was Wes Anderson's first feature-length film. And it starred Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson, and James Caan had a cameo in it. Very funny movie. Quirky, weird, not jokey comedy, like character-driven comedy that is just, it's just about three guys who want to be a gang. They want to rob places and be like an old school gang. And the first place they decide they're going to rob is a library. And it just kind of takes off from there. One guy meets a girl. It's just quirky and fun. It's a great ride. If you haven't seen Bottle Rocket, I highly recommend it. And to me, it's still, to this day, it's Wes Anderson's best film. So we'll be talking about Bottle Rocket. We have a couple clips we'll play later. We got some Old School clips coming up. Our question tonight, who is the funniest character in Old School? Who did you like the best? Who's your favorite character in Old School? And you can share what your favorite scene was, too. That's fine as well. Anything about the movie you want to contribute, and as usual, anything we are talking about, you're welcome to weigh in on. We love to hear from listeners throughout the course of the show. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. And for those of you who like to get down, 844-96-PARTY. You can also text us on the Civic Media app. We're on statewide, so you click on any one of the stations, and there's an icon that allows you to text right there. It's so easy and a great way to reach me here and let me know your thoughts. So, Conrad, I think we have to kick this off. Are you ready to handle texts and calls, by the way?
Of course.
Okay. I know we talked about the shorts issue, but I'm glad that you're ready to party down, take those texts. We had a lot of texts last night. I could barely keep up with them.
Yeah.
And I don't even think, you know, usually when we have a great text night, some of your family members weigh in. Did your family even text last night?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, did they? Okay. Yep. Oh, yeah, your dad liked Caddyshack. That's right.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's kick things off with a what do we have here from Old School? I sent you a ton of stuff. What should we lead with?
We could start with... Let's see. The wedding toast we could do.
Oh, let's do the wedding toast. Okay. The wedding toast is the best. All right. In this scene, Will Ferrell, I'm sure you've seen the movie. If you haven't, Will Ferrell has just gotten married. Luke Wilson is starting the toast, and he just came home and found his girlfriend cheating with two people. So he's giving the wedding toast, and it's Vince Vaughn to the rescue.
And excuse me, I'd like to say I'm really glad and proud to be here tonight. I'm glad to see Frank's dad made it out. That's awesome. I hadn't seen him in like 8 years. That's great. Congratulations.
I love you, Dad.
True love is hard to find. Sometimes you think you have true love, and then you catch the early flight home from San Diego, and a couple of nude people jump out of your bathroom blindfolded like a damn magic show, ready to double-team your girlfriend, and it stops.
It stops right there. And it continues right here, because I think what my friend Mitch is trying to say is that true love is blind. Let's raise our glasses, whatever we got in front of us. Salute, health and happiness. Cheers, everybody. I love you so much, Frankie.
I love you. I'm not a talker. I love you. Congratulations.
I'm not a talker. I love the little things in Old School. Just that little moment where Luke Wilson acknowledges Frank's dad, who incidentally was played by Vince Vaughn's real life dad. Vince Vaughn's dad makes several appearances in movies over the years. Just little quick shots like that, but just a great little shout out. And Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell has reached the point where anything he says can be funny. It's not even a joke in the script. Him just saying, I love you, Dad, while he's cleaning food out of his teeth with his tongue is just, it's so real and so funny. I love it. Do we have time for another one? Let's try to get one more in here.
Yeah, in spirit of the wedding, we could do the wedding song played.
All right, this is the best ever. This is the wedding. This is Will Ferrell and his wife's first dance, Frank the Tank, and his wife's first dance at the wedding with a very rude wedding band playing.
Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming round.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified. I see the f***ing look in your eyes.
Turn around, bright eyes.
Every now and then I fall apart.
So great. That's the Dan Band playing that role of the wedding band. I have to say, there was a coffee shop I used to go to in LA with my computer, and that's where I would write. It was called Lulu's Beehive. It was in off Coldwater Canyon in Sherman Oaks. One day, Dan from the Dan Band walked in, and I almost started convulsing. It's so weird when you see people who, like, that guy's not a big star, but he had kind of a following around L.A. People like to go watch his band sing, and he would do that with a lot of songs. They would add swear words, and I never went and saw him, but I literally was, like, beside myself. Oh, my God, that's the guy from Old School. That's the guy who swears during the wedding toast. And, you know, just having a cup of coffee. So this is a great night. Jeff Cesario's coming up in a little bit. Anya Esther's here. Jorge Reyna. So much fun. We're talking Old School and Bottle Rocket, some birthdays to get to. And tonight's question, what was your favorite scene in Old School? Who's the funniest character? Let us know. 844-967-2789. I read your text next, and we talk more about all things show business on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you have cabin fever, Crafted may be good for what ails you. 29 Pines Hotel and Convention Center in Eau Claire is hosting nonstop crafting classes and a whole lot of laughing and relaxing March 1st through the 3rd. Oh, and did I mention door prizes? Yell it with me. Bingo! It's friendly competition at the Knights of Columbus on Pump House Road in Chippewa Falls. Doors at 4, bingo at 7 every Friday through the end of May. Food and fun, too. If you're under 18, you can still play if you are with an adult. La la la, get your voice ready to sing. Read poetry, provide some comedy for Open Mic Tuesday at The Plus on Barstow Street in Eau Claire. Free, open to all ages and talents. Stop in any Tuesday night from 7 to 10. Until next time, I'm Cherry Barr.
Tonight's question: who's your favorite character in Old School? What was your favorite scene? A friend of mine texts. I don't know why my friend Tim refuses to text on the text. He always texts my phone, whatever I'm asking. It's like, you know, it could help the show if you would just text on the text line. But he does it now just because he thinks it's funny. 844-967-2789. That's the number, or you can text in the app. Very easy to do that as well. Let us know your favorite scene from Old School or your favorite character from the 608. Rico from Rock County says, Hank the Tank streaking. I got to say, I was in tears after he wants to stop at KFC. You know, it's so hard. It's a great text, Rico. That's one of my favorite scenes too, because I wanted to cut that scene for the show and play it, but it's not like that's totally... The clips I tend to use in the show are audio-based because it's radio, but that scene is so funny with Will Ferrell, who is completely uninhibited, always has been, in all of his movies. He's not afraid to show his backside, bare, whatever. Very funny scene. And I love Snoop Dogg's reaction to Will Ferrell coming out naked and ruining the party. Great scene, great text. And then my friend Tim says, when the mud wrestling scene where the old guy dies. Yeah, that was funny. I'm not going to give you total kudos, Tim, until you text on the actual text line. So, Conrad, how do you feel about internet ads?
That they're targeting me?
Well, no, here's my issue with internet ads. I feel like I want to pull my hair out. Yeah. When I go to YouTube and I have to sit through 15 seconds of some ridiculous ad, yeah. I literally want to lose it. And that's a flaw on my part. I need to be better because that's not a big deal. 15 seconds. And that's how they make money, is selling ads. My issue is, I remember growing up, TV was a lot of ads, network television. Then I discovered the internet in the mid-2000s, 2005, 2006, whenever YouTube came up or MySpace or whatever. It was all free. There were no ads. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And with streaming services as well, there were no ads. But now they're sneaking them in there. So you got to pay more. And sometimes you pay more. Like Prime, I've got ads now on Prime. I'm paying for Prime. Now they're working ads in. It's terrible. I'll pay a couple extra bucks for no ads. And I guess on some of these you can do that. But anyway, my point is, I'm looking for these clips today from Bottle Rocket and Old School. And that 15 seconds, knowing what I know, that you used to not have to sit through that. Or if you want to play a three-minute song, I have to sit through sometimes 60 seconds of ads for a three-minute song. That's not worth it. Am I on an island here?
No. I was trying to get those, you know, the swear bleeps so I can bleep over lines.
Yeah.
It's only about 10 seconds worth of the bleep, and I'm watching a 30-second ad for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's what irritates me the most.
Brutal. And they're most of the time, they're terrible ads.
Yeah.
That's awful. So it's Jennifer Love Hewitt's birthday today, too. She was in an iconic film called I Know What You Did Last Summer that launched a couple careers. I think she was already sort of, she was on Party of Five, I think. She was already on the map. But Freddie Prinze Jr., Ryan Phillippe, in my opinion, one of the worst actors ever. Seems like a nice guy, though. And Sarah Michelle Gellar are in this film. Sarah Michelle Gellar was already kind of established as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But I don't know. Jennifer Love Hewitt, could she be 44? I don't know. That was a long time ago. Let's see, 97, 24, 27 years ago, she would have been 17. I don't think her age is right. I think she's older than that. Either way, she's celebrating a birthday today, and I thought we would celebrate with her by playing a clip from I Know What You Did Last Summer. This is sort of the climax of the movie right here.
We're going to fry no matter who takes the fall. Can we leave right now?
No way. Are you crazy?
The grill's busted. There's blood everywhere. We can clean it up. Come on.
Listen to yourselves. No, we are going to the police.
We don't have time for your You understand? We gotta move fast.
Hey, let's try to stay calm. Focus.
Don't you get it? If there's some of him on the car, there's some of the car on him. They're gonna trace it back to you. You're looking at a hit and run.
Then we dump the body.
You lost it. Let's just pretend we were never here.
We could drag him to the water and dump him in. They wouldn't find the for weeks. By that time, all the evidence would be washed away.
You found him at all? The currents are strong. The undertow could carry him out to sea.
I won't be any part of it.
There's a scene from I Know What You Did Last Summer, starring the birthday girl, Jenny Love Hewitt. Coming up in just a few minutes, folks, Jeff Cesario, he's an award-winning, Emmy-winning writer and a very funny stand-up who Jeff's been around a while. He was on The Old Tonight Show. He wrote for Larry Sanders, the Dennis Miller Live Show, award shows, variety shows, very talented guy, and a native son. Jeff grew up in Kenosha. I'm very excited to have him on the show. Anya Esther will be along a little later, and Jorge Reyna, talking about Mad Unity and what's coming up tonight. Who is the funniest old school character, or what was your favorite scene? That's our question tonight. 844-96-PARTY. Let us know. Do we have a time for another old school clip, Conrad?
Yeah, we could.
Do you have the one? Did I send you the one where Frank is freaking out in the locker room?
No.
Okay. I should have, because that scene, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, that reminded me, one of them said, "We can't freak out." Will Ferrell has the same line in Old School when he starts slamming the chair against the lockers. Let's go with an old school. Surprise me.
Well, I guess I, deep down, I'm feeling a little confused. I mean, suddenly you get married and you're supposed to be this entirely different guy. I don't feel different. I mean, take yesterday, for example. We were out at the Olive Garden for dinner, which was lovely. And I happened to look over at a certain point during the meal and see a waitress taking an order, and I found myself wondering what color her underpants might be, her panties. Odds are they're probably basic white cotton underpants. But I started thinking, well, maybe they're silk panties. Maybe it's a thong. Maybe it's something really cool that I don't even know about, you know. And I started feeling, what? What, I thought we were in the trust tree in the nest. Are we not?
We are.
Okay.
We are. It's okay. Hmm? We are. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's okay. Please, continue.
I don't know where I was going with that. I guess what I'm trying to say is that now that I'm married, I'm definitely feeling a little freaked out about the fact that I'm going to have sex with only one person for the rest of my life.
So great, Will Ferrell. Nobody makes the word underpants is a funny word to begin with, but Will Ferrell makes it even funnier. Here's from the 608 Rico from Rock County again. Hey, Pete, as long as I'm on the Will Ferrell thing, I must say I think the funniest comedy I've seen in recent times, both 1 and 2, is the cast and crew and writing that goes with Daddy's Home. Okay, Rico. I can dig it. Keep those texts coming, folks. Your favorite school from, or your favorite scene or character from Old School. That's our question tonight. Coming up next, award-winning writer and comedian Jeff Cesario on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey,
ABC News, I'm Daria Albing. The Biden administration is considering executive action to toughen asylum restrictions. An official says the president is still hoping Congress will pass a border security deal. More than 150,000 Americans will get emails from President Biden telling them their student loan debt has been forgiven.
Starting today, we're canceling student debt for borrowers who are enrolled in the SAFE plan and have been paying student loans for as little as 10 years.
To qualify, you must also have a balance of no more than $12,000. The FBI is offering an up to $15,000 reward for information which leads to the whereabouts of 12-year-old Lori Page. The Tallahassee, Florida girl has been missing since last June. A high school in Jackson, Mississippi was on lockdown while police searched for three armed suspects who were accused of stealing vehicles and firearms. The suspects fled into a wooded area. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republicans are trying again to cut state income taxes by $2 billion. The state Senate passed a package yesterday that lowers taxes on people earning as much as $150,000 a year. Senate Republican Majority Leader Devin Lemahue.
We still have over $3 billion surplus in Wisconsin that's just sitting there earning interest. It's the taxpayers' money. It's time to give that money back.
Governor Evers vetoed two Republican tax cuts last year. The University of Wisconsin in Madison must now accept all high school graduates from the state who finish in the top 5% of their class. All other state universities have to admit grads in the top 10%. It's part of the deal for state money in exchange for diversity program cuts. Governor Evers signed the bill yesterday. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
It's 2024. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you live across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jane Matt Nair.
And I'm Greg Bach.
Join us Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon as we break down the news and share some laughs along the way.
We're talking to politicians, we're talking to community leaders, and we're talking to anyone who has a story.
And we occasionally get a visit from an umbrella cockatoo. Join us for Matt Nair on Air Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low in the low 30s. Sunshine again for tomorrow, a high in the low 50s. Cooler on Friday, mostly sunny in mid-30s. The weekend will remain dry with lots of sunshine, breezy Saturday, low 40s, near 50 Sunday. It's 42 right now.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, the loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Max Inc. Radio invites you to a live concert each week over the radio. It's Live in the Lair on Max Inc. Saturday night. It's a full hour of live music and in-depth interviews with the artists. Listen across Civic Media every Saturday at 9 p.m. and grab the podcast at maxincradio.com. Live in the Lair, presented by the Aaron Weber Group at movetomadison.com. Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. App.
Mm-hmm.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to the Nightlight with Pete Schwabba podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabba anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabba.
Hey, welcome back to Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Wednesday night as we take a trip down memory lane and talk about old school, Bottle Rocket, and but now we're going to switch to the new guard. I'm very excited to have this next guest on. He is a Wisconsin native, and we became friends when I was living out in Los Angeles. I wish we were better friends, but he keeps me at a distance. I'm fine with that. It's just happy to be on his periphery. Jeff Cesario joins me now here on Nightlight. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, man. I just want to let your listeners know, I actually requested that you move back from the coast.
Oh, did you really?
That's far. That's a distance. I felt our friendship needed.
We could do a... So you don't want me back. We could do like a crowdfunding thing to get me to hire a moving company or something. But
yeah, there you go. Or we at some point we just completely flip.
You want to come back?
I take over the show. Come out here and hustle scripts.
Take your kid to school.
We give it a shot.
Run around with all your A-list celebrities.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, hey, right.
Yeah. This is great, Jeff.
I'll fish.
This is great to have you on the show. You got your start. You're from Kenosha. Did you start doing stand-up when you were in Kenosha? Or how did, tell us a little bit about how and when you started doing stand-up.
I didn't really start stand-up in Kenosha, but my interest in comedy was nurtured there. When I was a kid, I just loved staying up late and watching The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and seeing comedians on there. And then when I got into high school, actually probably junior high, I started to realize that I had extraordinarily limited athletic ability. And so I couldn't, get any interest out of women that avenue. And really, wasn't built like something you would be attracted to. So I had neither of those elements going for me, but I did seem to have a bit of an affinity for making people laugh. And so I kind of kept working at that. And then in high school, there's a tremendous drummer out of Kenosha, Wisconsin. There's a lot of amazing musicians out of Kenosha. His name is Steve Houghton, and his dad was a crucial part of the public school music system there. Steve is a tremendous drummer who came out to California, became a top call studio musician, drummed with the Woody Herman Orchestra and with a great jazz trumpet player named Freddie Hubbard and many other tremendous musicians. He and I in high school decided for the high school variety show to do Who's On First, the great Abbott and Costello bit. And we did it, and there was a definite chemistry there. And Steve is a really hilarious guy. And as an amazing drummer, has unbelievable timing. So that kind of, it kind of really got me interested. And then the following year, we did three sketches in the variety show, all of them duos. And those all killed, and I was absolutely bitten by the desire for the affirmation of total strangers. That was really my addictive substance there. Then I got into music mostly and writing. I did some freelance writing over the next several years, 10 years or so. But it kept bothering me inside that I wanted to try that. And I remember going to stand-up shows before I was a stand-up. And I remember one in particular in Minneapolis. I was visiting friends up there, and I just was sitting in a crowd, Pete, and I thought to myself, I like had a anxiety attack. And I was just sitting there thinking, I am not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be up there. I literally had to leave. I was with a friend of mine who was a tremendous writer named Sam Friedman, who has written New York Times bestsellers and worked for the Times for a long time and teaches at Columbia. And I just remember sitting there going, Sam, I got to leave. We were like 4 minutes into the first comic.
Wow.
What? We just got it. I said, I know, but I can't take it. My agita level is off the chart, as they say in Kenosha. And so I had the split. And so we took off. And then within a month or so, I started to do stand up myself. And I'd always had kept kind of a little notebook with ideas I thought might be funny. And I started to work on those and massage those and rewrite them. And I hit Minneapolis at a good time. Comedy was getting hot in the early 80s, and Minneapolis was a great but very small scene. There were about 6 to 10 comics who really got all the work there. So when crowds started to regenerate, people, when they started to come back, you know, even if it was just once a month or so, you know, they needed to show new blood. They needed to show new material for themselves, the veteran comics there. And they needed to feature new comics. So I hit it at a good time. And I started to get stage time, which is the key to stand-up comedy. Just get the stage time. I was, within a year, I was getting about 2.5 hours a week of stage time, which is unheard of.
That's fascinating that you were sitting in the crowd and felt anxiety. You weren't on the stage like most people. No. You were in the crowd and you had anxiety. That I love that.
Right. Wow. I had performance anxiety from the crowd, which is really weird.
Right. So there's so much I want to ask you and jump right in. So you went from there, you became a writer, you worked on so many shows, variety, talk, award shows, you wrote a screenplay that got made. Tell us a little bit about, if you would, Jeff, working for Dennis Miller.
Yes, Dennis and I became fast friends in the mid 80s in Los Angeles. We got to town just about the same time. He's from Pittsburgh. I'm from the Midwest, of course, from Wisconsin, but my comedy hometown is Minneapolis. That's where I spent 3 years before I moved out. We hit LA at around the same time, and we had a similar Rust Belt sensibility. We were both from areas that had seen better days. And that is a kind of cultural yoga mat that you just lay on, and everything kind of comes from that, you know, that really shapes a perspective. So we hit it off pretty fast, Dennis and I. And that was long before anything happened with Dennis's career, or my career for that matter. We were kind of two sides of the same coin. We wrote in a similar fashion. He was a little sharper, a little edgier, a little more focused, I would say, in terms of his point of view. It was very snarky,
yeah,
bright, brilliant writing. But likable snarky.
Right.
And then I was kind of a nicer version of that. I didn't often veer into politics, at least in my act. But as we started to hang out together and just have fun together, we just loved cracking each other up. I mean, the biggest memories I have of Dennis are just us howling, you know, in my studio apartment, or in a dopey car that one of us owned, driving to some stupid gig, just howling because we would really like making each other laugh. We loved cracking each other up. And that's, you know, that's like a bond that's unbreakable. It's like, you know, Mahomes and Kelsey, you know, it's
without the Taylor Swift element.
Yeah, right. Definitely without that. But it's something that's chemical.
Yeah.
It's just kind of in you. And so we hit it off. And then he got a big break with SNL like 85, I think, 85, 86. And I distinctly remember that at the time, there was nobody writing for Weekend Update for Dennis. They had a, you know, 15 member writing staff, but they were all so crazed trying to get sketches on. And, you know, that environment is pressure packed every single day, all day of every week in the season at Saturday Night Live. So nobody could really spare the time. He had Herb Sargent was doing some stuff, but even Herb at the time was so busy with other things. So I just said, Denny, I will throw you lines, because I was making most of my money out on the road. So I was working 7-8 months a year, and I was doing topical stuff in my act that would be burnt in a week or two anyway.
Right.
So I would just throw Dennis 3 or 4 lines every couple of weeks or so and just say, hey, if they're functional for you, go ahead and use them. And we kind of bonded over that as well.
Nice.
And then flash forward, I did a bunch of Tonight shows starting in 1987. And Dennis was on fire from Saturday Night Live and started to get a lot of interest. And then in the early 90s, he got a talk show deal for more of a traditional talk show. And it kind of didn't pan out. And HBO and his manager at the time, Brad Gray, said, let's do something that we focus on your ability to rant. That's what they wanted out of Dennis. That's the essence of what they wanted out of Dennis in a half hour. And Dennis just called me up and he said, Jeff Prow, you want to produce this thing for me? And, you know, I hadn't produced anything except my own comedy specials, but I said, yeah, I'd love to. So we kind of dove in, and in retrospect, now I can see, after an additional 25 years of experience, Pete, I can see, back then, the management, the network at HBO, everybody must have been just like, you know, the kid's nice. Could we get a producer in here who has some experience? But at the time, I was doing enough, and we were shaping a brand new format around Dennis. It was like a tailor-made suit, and I knew Denny better than most everybody else. So I think I was very valuable in that process for Dennis, and we designed a show, and we were very fortunate. We had a tremendous co-executive producer named Kevin Slattery, who handled everything else so that I could handle Dennis and the joke writing and stuff like that. It was a tremendous team, and Brolstein Gray was on top of their game, and the HBO executives, Bridget Potter and Carolyn Strauss, were unbelievable. And Michael Fuchs, who was the head of the network at the time, was a huge supporter. We got lucky. Our second show went through the roof. We won an Emmy for it.
I was just going to say, the Emmy, yeah. That's huge. What does that do to your writing resume, Jeff? That's incredible.
It's pretty cool to have that on. It does elevate you. It helps your business team more than anything else try to market you and try to get you other work if you're desirous of that.
Right.
So that's very helpful. I just remember being at the Emmys, and it was before cable was winning Emmys. It was, up to that point.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of this. Dennis Miller Live was the first cable series to beat a network series in a main competitive category, and that was writing. Up to that point, cable had only won, Colleen Dewhurst won for a 3-part dramatic thing, the kind of thing you would not find on network television. So it was only those kinds of things that were kind of sneaking through. And then in, I think it was 94, 95, we won our first Emmy, and it was the late, great Phil Hartman who was giving out the award. And when he said Dennis Miller Live, we just all looked at each other like, are you crazy? We won for writing in a variety talk show format. And literally so 4 years later, Pete, there were no more Cable Ace Awards.
Oh, my gosh.
HBO was winning Emmys in bucketfuls. And we were the first show that kind of popped the balloon there. And then, the dam broke and everything came through, if I may mix my metaphors between balloons and dams. So writing for Dennis, for me, easy as pie. And quite frankly, especially in retrospect, although I had an inkling of it at the time, one of the easiest guys I ever worked with creatively.
That's so great. Hey, Jeff, hold that thought for 1 second, will you? My guest is Jeff Cesario. He's been on The Tonight Show, and he's an Emmy-winning writer, and he's here on Nightlight. We'll have more with him next on Nightlight with Peach Weller.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
Did you know there was a time when African Americans couldn't buy their own homes? In 1948, the Supreme Court ruled the ban on selling property to black buyers was unconstitutional. Yet black people still couldn't purchase homes in white neighborhoods. The Fair Housing Act in 1968 ended this type of discrimination. But there's still work to do. Today, only 40% of black populations own their own homes. Listen for another Black History Story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Welcome back. We are broadcasting state live on the Civic Media Radio Network from our WGBW studios here at City Deck Landing in beautiful downtown Green Bay. My guest is Emmy Award-winning writer and very funny stand-up and all-around good guy and native Wisconsinite,
That's
Jeff
correct.
Cesario. So great to have you here, Jeff. Okay, so that was Dennis Miller. You also were a huge part of one of my favorite shows, Jeff, The Larry Sanders Show. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and Gary Shandling?
Well, that was a blast. I called it narrative camp, like you go away to camp when you're a kid.
Yeah.
I learned how to write narrative structure just from that show. Gary, I met Gary through Dennis Miller. Gary Shandling would guest host The Tonight Show when Johnny would step away between Jay Leno and Gary Shandling. Those were sort of the two permanent guest hosts. This is late 80s, 87 right. around there. And Dennis called me one day and he said, listen, I'm sitting in at the Tonight Show offices and I'm writing monologue with Gary Shandling for tonight's show. We're stuck. We got a setup. We don't have a joke. I told him I'd call you so you can come up with something. And The setup was, I still remember this. This was back when Tammy Faye Baker had a talk show.
Oh my gosh.
And she was taking a hiatus and they were going to have guest hosts. That was the setup. So I said, I was in my hot little unair conditioned studio apartment and I hung up from Dennis. I said, Dennis, you know me, you got to give me 5 minutes. He said, I know. And I don't expect something flying off the top of your freaking head. So I called him back in 5 minutes and I said, Tammy Faye Baker's going on hiatus from her talk show. They're going to get guest hosts. They're going to start with Joan Rivers because that way they don't have to change makeup ladies. And so Shandling loved the joke and he used it that night and they called me in. And that's how I met Gary Shandling. Whenever he would guest host The Tonight Show, I would go in. And it was Dennis, me, and Gary. And Dennis was a star on SNL already.
Yeah.
Gary was a star. And that was just Gary's mindset. He came from writing. He started as a writer. He wrote for Sanford and Son and some of the great sitcoms in the 70s. And he came from that, so he had tremendous respect for writers. He would get sheets of jokes from whoever he could, including the regular Tonight Show staff. So he just would augment the Tonight Show staff just for a week of guest hosting. But he wanted that monologue to crush. He really had a great approach to writing. And that's how I met Gary. And then when he got the Larry Sanders Show, which came on the heels of the brilliant It's Gary Shandling Show.
Yeah.
Which was also groundbreaking.
Incredible.
And amazing. And I got to know Gary a little bit more through the years. And then when Larry Sanders hit, he also at the time did not have anybody writing monologue for Larry for the show, The Larry Sanders Show,
wow.
because it was such a small part of the show kind of, But for Gary, it was important because he still, even though they might only use one joke an episode or every other episode, even, he still wanted them to be funny and within the groove of who Larry Sanders was. So I would just go in and have fun with Gary Shandling writing monologue jokes for Larry Sanders. And then they would have these monologue nights where they would literally tape the entire season's worth of monologues in one night. They would get a crowd there and he would just change suits between monologues, you know,
nice.
For each episode. And he would do it old style, old Carson style, where the jokes were written on cue cards and we'd lay them out behind the curtain and then he'd go through them like a coach looking at a playbook and he'd select the jokes he wanted and we'd do it. And
so great.
As a thank you for doing that, he used my name on air whenever, often. When if you know the show, they often start with a little snippet of the talk show that then ends, and then Larry goes into his dressing room and has a problem. usually at the end of the, often at the end of those little snippets of the talk show, as the talk show was ending, he would say, "My apologies to Jeff Cesario, stand up, we'll have him on soon."
So that's great.
That's sort of how he would thank me. And that became a thing to the point where one day Judd Apatow and I were just sitting around and I said, I think he's kind of officially bumped me like a dozen times. I wanted to kind of get into writing that type of show. And I suggested to Judd that we write an episode about called The Bump, where he just bumps me again. And I am so discouraged that I kind of guilt him into forcing me on the next night. And then the next great. Night show, all hell breaks loose. Hank's dad died and he wants to do a eulogy.
Oh yeah.
The rock band, instead of not wanting to do any numbers, which is usually the rock band thing on a talk show, they want to do like three numbers. So my set keeps shrinking from 6 minutes to 4 minutes to like a minute and a half. And then the tag is I wind up getting on. I do well for a minute and a half. And then we go to Larry Sanders' house to watch it that night as it runs. And the second I'm about to come on air, I'm preempted by another slow speed celebrity police chase through the highways.
Oh my gosh, is that fun?
So I still never make it on the air. And Gary liked the way that worked enough to hire me the next year on staff. So I did a season on staff at the Larry Sanders Show, which was worth about 10 years of writing on any other project.
That's crazy. I have to tell you, I think at Century City one time, I went into a restroom at a movie theater and I'm standing at the urinal and Jeffrey Tambor is next to me. And
yeah.
Jeff, it took everything in my power not to say, "Hey now," because I'm sure he would have punched me and he would have been right to do it because he gets that all the time.
I don't think so. Jeffrey loved that stuff. And that was an amazing, unpredicted upside to that gig for me.
Right.
Is, you know, you're not just writing a sitcom. You're writing a brilliant sitcom out of the brain of Gary Shandling that's written on a dramatic chassis.
Right.
A comedic chassis. And then the jokes come from actually the drama of it. That's the whole point. And then you have a cast with Jeffrey Tambor and Rip Torn.
Crazy great cast.
And, you know, Janine Garofalo. And oh, my God.
Jeff, hold that thought. We got a couple more minutes with our guest, with Jeff Cesario, native Wisconsinite. And a huge Badger fan. We'll talk about that next on Nightlight with Peach Waba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I feel my heart start to tremble whenever you're
on air,
1490 AM,
online,
lacrosseeagle.com,
and on the Civic Media app. This is Eagle 1490.
This is Dom from the Devil's Advocates. Tune in on Thursday. Our pal, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, going to join us, and we're going to get into the Alexander Smirnoff issue.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in, goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now, is to take a Kringle and go away?
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.